Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Vikings begin their three-game road trip today in Jacksonville against the Jaguars. Sounds like, and I have not seen the inactives for Jacksonville yet, but I think it is pretty much a done deal that Trevor Lawrence is not playing today. Josh, have we had that confirmed?
I believe Schefter dropped that bombshell this morning for sure. So either way, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday as well. Let's be honest. Is it really a factor?
Jacksonville's hot garbage.
Is it really a factor whether or not Trevor does play? Because Trevor is so far not living up to the potential that I think Jacksonville had hoped he would.
Well, don't get me started on what teams think they're going to get out of these quarterbacks when you have a terrible situation. Yeah. I mean, and actually that goes perfectly into Sam Darnold, which is who we want to talk about here. And again, the idea that you're going to bring in a quarterback with nothing around him, and Jacksonville doesn't have a ton around Trevor Lawrence and has not had a ton around him to help him succeed. He is inactive today, by the way. I mean, the leading receiver is Brian Thomas Jr. He's got 595 yards. It's just not, you're not setting up to succeed. And I think there's been an argument out there forever that Sam Darnold has not had that. Has not had around him the cast of characters to succeed. Now he does. He does in Minnesota. And even though they eke out a win last week against, I guess eke out, it's more than eke out. But it wasn't necessarily his best performance, I didn't think. A 21-13 win over Indianapolis. But as I look back through it again, his completion percentage, still, he completed 82% of his passes last week against Indianapolis. And three touchdowns, two interceptions. The interceptions, at least one of those, I think he definitely want back. And so what I kind of found myself doing was saying, all right, Dave, and I have been on the Sam Darnold bandwagon since week one. And he came out and we're like, oh, my gosh, how has anyone ever ignored this kid? How have they not seen this? But I think we're starting to see now, and we've talked about when it's going to happen, this regression to the mean of Sam Darnold, and when are we going to see it? I think we've seen it the last 3 weeks, but I also think the mean is not as low as we thought it was. So what we really need to do here is pump the brakes just a little bit on Sam Darnold, but not too much. I'm not saying that this guy is not, that he's an all-star. He's not. Or a Pro Bowl, or whatever you want to, whatever they call it. They don't even do a Pro Bowl anymore. It's just a skills competition. But I do think it's important to recognize that Sam Darnold is overperforming what people thought he was going to do. And he is exactly what I think the Vikings had hoped he would be, which is a bargain placeholder. And he's a bargain. At what they're paying him, he's a bargain. And next year, he's either going to be a backup or he'll be somewhere else. And then you will have J.J. McCarthy come in. But, a couple weeks, and I know these last few weeks that the whispers have been louder and louder that Sam Darnold, maybe he's not, maybe they should try to get rid of him. And, a couple weeks ago is the idea of wanting to trade him, which is ridiculous. And so I'll ask you this. Of the, and I'm not saying overall number one guys out there, but of the maybe journeyman quarterbacks or guys that have been moved around, Is there someone you would rather have than Sam Darnold right now? When you look at the list of either potential free agents, and it might be, and he's one of those next year, who would you rather have than him? Josh, is there anyone out there? And I'll put this to you. I'll put this to our listeners on the stylesfinancial.com talking text line, 651-461-9226. Is there another backup quarterback? Because Darnold is a backup. Let's be very clear. He was the backup. Is there a better backup quarterback that you'd rather have right now on your roster than Sam Darnold? I say no. I don't think that there is. What do you think, Josh?
Backup, no. Obviously, we all know the Baker Mayfield story is very similar and almost is very correlated to, because they both played on the same team. They both were in a probably worse situation than Jacksonville and Carolina. That was just a hot mess. But as far as a backup, the only one I can really think of is Stetson Bennett, because I don't know. I don't know if he would be better in a different system than L.A. I'm not ripping on Sean McVay. I think he's one of the best coaches out there. I don't think they have quite all the pieces for that. And being under Matthew Stafford is a great learning tree. We learned that also with Baker Mayfield. But still, like, I'm trying to think of some backups that are just sitting out there. And the next Case Keenum, if you will, of quarterbacks. Because, you know, Stetson, I keep forgetting that he's on that Rams team. Mm-hmm. And this is his second year in the league. So I'm just trying to think if there is possibly a different option out there.
Andy Dalton.
Justin Fields, maybe,
but I would not. I would much rather have Sam Darnold in his current state than any of them. And I think, you know, the other thing to think about here is obviously he's on a 1 year deal, but he's only played now one game with T.J. Hockenson. I think last week was the first week that he played. And you know, we talked about that with Matt Collar last week, that having T.J. Hockenson back is another – he's your wide receiver three. He is your wide receiver number three. And so I still think when you look at his statistics and what he's done throughout this year, it's just – you know, someone texted in the first hour that it's – at some point, you know, speaking about the Gophers, you have to – understand what this truly is, which is an average football program. And so I would extend that to your Vikings quarterbacks and say, you have to understand that Sam Darnold is a average to better than average NFL quarterback at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's a better option out there that anyone would be, you know, that you'd want. And so I've been very happy with the way he's played. And I think we're going to see here, as long as the Vikings don't trip, you've got Jacksonville this week. You've got Tennessee after that. You've got Chicago, Arizona, and then the big one with the Falcons in Week 14, which should be an exciting game. But I mean, barring injury, this game is a win today for Minnesota. The Titans game is a win. The Bears are a mess. Yeah. They're a mess.
Not good.
Caleb Williams, they are going to squander Caleb Williams, I think, just like they did Mitch Trubisky, just like they, you know, other teams
Justin
have done.
Fields. Yeah.
Justin Fields as well. I mean, there's any number. What are these teams going to learn? I'm not the smartest football guy in the room. I'm not the smartest any guy in the room. But it is so apparent to me that bringing in a rookie quarterback in a bad situation almost never works.
I think
it almost never works.
I can't remember if it was Brady or Rodgers this past week talked about a little bit about that, where they need to, these teams need to stop throwing in rookie quarterbacks into the first year, and they need to have them sit back and, you know, be under a learning tree for maybe a year or half a season or something, just so they can get kind of the feel for things, because you're taking the training wheels off relatively quickly. And you're finding out real quick whether or not, because fans and organizations, they want now. They don't have, like, we don't live in a sports society where, you know, we have the patience to sit on these things. We want results ASAP.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the problem that we're facing. And another name I'm going to throw out there to you, because I think this is an interesting backup option that I think a lot of people, including myself, would entertain on this squad with this offensive line, is Michael Penix Jr. in Atlanta.
I would have loved to have had him here.
Yeah.
I was not shy. Pete and I both talked about how much we liked him.
Yeah.
And speaking of the Falcons, at draft time, we all laughed, right? We all were like, what are you doing? You're taking your pick in the first round after you've just spent big money on a quarterback. And we all were like, what are you doing? Now who looks like the idiot? They're 6-3. Kirk Cousins is playing well. Michael Penix Jr. is learning. And when Kirk is done or eventually starts to fall off, they've got their quarterback of the future. They were smarter than everybody.
Yeah.
And we laughed at them. We all said, oh, you guys are idiots. Why are you doing this? And, I mean, if you look at the teams that drafted quarterbacks in the first round this year and maybe even last year, the Commanders are about the only one that's really, you know, with Jaden Daniels that have had success this year. Am I right? Am I missing somebody?
Jaden's in the MVP conversation, if you ask me. Like, honestly,
as a rookie?
Yeah, I don't know. He's putting up some serious numbers, and he's a big reason why that team is doing as well as they are. And I'm looking at this TV screen in the studio right now, and I'm looking at a quarterback that kind of fits your description of why players shouldn't go full throttle into the start of the season, and it's Josh Allen. We all remember his first year in Buffalo. Yes, he beat the Vikings. We all remember that little clunker at U.S. Bank Stadium. It wasn't good. But Josh Allen, it took a couple seasons for them to get the wheels off the ground with him, and now he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league.
Who did they surround him with? I mean, he had Diggs around him. He had Sammy Watkins around him. They had LeSean McCoy at one point in the backfield. I mean, he was surrounded with talent. I don't – you know, when you look at Caleb Williams, what does he have around him?
I feel for Caleb.
I do.
I wish Chicago was not where he landed because I knew it was going to be an area he was not going to be able to get back out of. Like, once you jump in that hole, you can't climb back out of it, and it's very hard to do that. And we're learning that real quick, that Caleb is not fit for that system. Maybe he can progress and develop his skills in the offseason, but man, it's a tough spot to be when you don't have a lot of tools, because Chicago didn't go super big in the offseason like a lot of teams did, and we're seeing it right now.
The StylesFinancial.com talking text line, how many average do a little better than average quarterbacks have played in the Super Bowl? I can think of three off the top of my head: Doug Williams, Rich Gannon, Wade Wilson. I would say you could add, what's that?
Nick Foles.
Yep. Trent Dilfer. All okay quarterbacks that, and I think some of those, I mean, I think of Dilfer and I think of that amazing Ravens defense. Doug Williams was a pretty good quarterback in Washington from what I remember. I think he was a little better than average,
I'm as big of a Jalen fan as anybody, but we're starting to learn that he has a pretty low ceiling right now, at least, just with injuries and whatnot. So I don't know if I put him in the okay category, but he's another one where, he made it to the Super Bowl, but they didn't it didn't amount to much against Kansas City.
No, it did not. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Pat Borzy, author from MinPost as well as New York Times. We're going to chat about the Twins' ownership woes. Who is going to own this team? What is possible? We'll talk about that with Pat coming up next. You're listening to WCCO. Pat Borzy writes for MinPost, the New York Times, all sorts of fantastic newspapers around the country, and is a good friend of myself and the show. Joins us this morning on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Dave. Good morning, Pete. How you doing?
It's good to be with you. Pete is actually in Paris, so you just get me today.
Oh, my bad.
Okay.
I made the mistake of not putting the show on in the last 20 minutes to air. My apologies.
Don't worry. It's fine. Knowing Pete, he's probably listening and appreciates the hello. He does love to listen to the show even when he's not here.
All right.
Pat, I've read somewhere that that it's usually about at least a 6-month process from the time of trying to sell a team to actually getting a team sold. In terms of what you're hearing about what a potential owner might possess, and what do you think that might draw the Twins to someone, and who is that? You don't have to give us names, but what does a potential owner look like?
Yeah, I can't really give you names because I'm not really privy to that. But, I mean, I'm just going to ballpark this. I mean, I would suspect it would be multiple people because the amount of money that it's going to cost to get a team, you're probably going to have to put some sort of consortium together. So I'm thinking, you know, multiple partners with one, the most baseball savvy person or the most baseball interested person as the lead person. And I wouldn't be altogether, you know, it's kind of interesting that, I mean, even when you talk to Twins employees, nobody's really sure that a sale is actually going to happen. I mean, it's
really,
I mean, because remember the language that they were just going to, the language of the statement that they were just going to, you know, explore a sale. Though it's interesting to hear Rob Manfred and Scott Boras both talking as if a sale is going to happen. I mean, Manfred was on a Sirius XM radio show talking about it, and Boras at the general manager's meeting. So I don't really have any inside information here. But I can tell you that the Twins people aren't altogether certain that they'll have a new owner because there's always a possibility that the poll ads change their minds. So we'll see how this all goes.
Let me ask you this from a Twins fan perspective, because people have routinely pointed to the fact that the family won't spend money to get the big-time free agents. But the other side of that is that we've seen teams win without giant payrolls. From a fan perspective, should fans be – is this an exciting time? Should they be excited about the possibility of new ownership and what that could do for the franchise? Or is it something that could backfire too, where even if they do up the payroll, the team is still where they're at, which is, you know, an average at best in the Central?
You know, I really have a hard time telling fans what to think. And that's just being honest. I mean, fans have a right to be emotional, and they're passionate. I mean, particularly around here. And this is a franchise that hasn't won a world championship since 1991. And until last year, hadn't won a playoff series in 20 years. I get where the most vocal fans are coming from. I mean, you know, they win a playoff series you know, they've got a lot of good players, and they spent money on Korea, and they spent money on Buxton, and, you know, the whole let's go. And then when you hear from Joe Pollard in spring training that they're not going to be going after big-time free agents, I get why fans are upset. It's interesting that I still hear fans going all the way back 20 years and being critical of the Pollards because Carl wanted to contract the Twins 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's fair to criticize the third generation of Pollards for something the grandfather did, but I do understand why people are frustrated. Hey, look, this isn't the only city where this is going on. You know, Yankee fans haven't won a world championship since 2009, and they've been over the top ridiculous criticizing that team. Though, of course, what we saw in the fifth inning of the final game of the World Series, I think what they're coming from. I think when you start telling fans how to think, that's when you run into problems. I mean, folks are frustrated, so I get it. I don't know whether the next owner will be any different from the current owner. We'll see.
We always hear that payroll, and this is more of a mantra of teams that are not at the top of the league in payroll, that payroll doesn't necessarily mean wins. However, when the Dodgers and the Yankees are in the World Series, it's really tough to make that argument. Is it still true, Pat, that payroll does not equal wins, or is that a bygone era and refrain?
Well, I mean, if you're the San Diego Padres and you spent all that money that they spent in the last few off seasons, they're still they're competitive with the Dodgers, but they're still looking for a world championship too. I mean, a huge payroll doesn't guarantee anything. I mean, you still have to do a lot of different things well, and you got to have a little bit of luck, especially when you have all these additional playoff rounds. I think it's really interesting what and then you look at a team like Tampa Bay, which is, you know, certainly doesn't have anywhere near the highest payroll in baseball, and they consistently put out teams that play well. Sometimes you just got to have a good organization around you, and it's less about the money that you spend than it is about the people who work for the team. Though I will say this, I mean, look at the Yankees, right? I mean, the Yankees have spent money for years and it hasn't paid off in a world championship in, just like I said, since 2009. It doesn't guarantee you a world championship, but it does help you get better players and it helps you get a better bench. But you better be able to develop your own pitching, particularly your starting pitching, and you better be able to develop some of your own players from your farm system, or you're going to struggle.
So let me ask you this as we conclude, Pat. If you had to put an odds on this that we will – let's say two questions. One, will we know who the ownership is in time for the season next year? And two, if we do, what do you think the odds are that it gets sold at all or that it stays with the Poleds?
I would be guessing completely. I mean, the one thing that I'm sure
that's all we do on this show, Pat. It's okay.
One thing I could say for certain is, given how long it takes, and it's too bad Pete's not here because he could probably back me up on this, being the financial guy. With everything that has to happen to get a new owner in place, I would say it's unlikely that there would be a new owner by opening day. And without knowing who the new owner is, it's hard to imagine. I mean, a new owner might spend more money. They might also look at the fact that this team hasn't drawn 2 million fans since 2019 and say, we need to put more people in the seats and generate more revenue before we can go after more free agents. You know, because that's – I know we're about out of time, but that's the biggest issue with the Twins now. I mean, and they're letting people know that the team's actually lost money the last couple of years. And the reason is because – Their television contract was the second lowest among all the different Diamond Holdings groups. Now, $54.8 million sounds like a pretty good chunk of change, but it's the second lowest to, I think, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And so the Twins, like a lot of teams, have to rely on gate receipts to pay the bills. And when you've added probably close to 100 additional employees from analytics and baseball operations department, to all the additional coaches and medical people and trainers and all these other folks that they've added since Falvey and Levine took over, it takes a bit. You still have a lot of money that you need to generate. And if their ballpark figure to kind of break even is like about $2.3 million, and they haven't hit that for a while. And that's part of the reason why they're in this financial situation. I don't know if that helps at all, but that may help some people understand what's going on here.
You know what? It helps me understand that this is, you know, when you look at this team in terms of an investment, it's a challenging one. That's for sure. I don't have billions, but it's certainly a challenging one. Buddy, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks as always.
Hey, Dave, thanks a lot. Have a good week. Take care.
You too, buddy. Pat Borzy, writer for multiple different publications, including the MinPost. Always great to have him on. We'll take a quick break. We will talk a little bit of Wild hockey coming up next. To what do they owe this success to start the season? And then at 11:45, Chris Hines going to join us, and we're going to get an update, hopefully an update, on who owns the Timberwolves. We'll see what we know. All that and around the corner. You're listening to The Huddle. Your Minnesota Wild are off to a really, really hot start to the season. And when you consider what they've done, so many of their big wins are on the road. I mean, they basically played almost the entire month of October on the road. And they are beating good teams. And they are getting outstanding scoring. I will say this now, and if people want to disagree with me, that's just fine. Kirill Kaprizov is second in the league in scoring. 27 points through 14 games. He has the high, he is 22% of his shots are going in the net, and he's getting about 21 minutes a game. This kid is solidifying himself as a top three, top five forward in the NHL. And it's what we have waited for. He's been great. I also happen to think that, to me, Josh, I think he looks healthier than he has in a really long time. I mean,
besides the little gash on his lip, he's got right now. Yeah,
that he got and he took one in the face. But last year, I'm going to get my timeline wrong. I feel like it was 2 years ago, end of the season against Winnipeg. He gets hurt real bad, or maybe it was during the season last year. But either way, I never felt like Kaprizov looked like he could look last year.
To be fair, I think it's happened each of his first couple seasons has. When you always kind of – I was thinking about this when I was in the car the other day. I'm like, I always cringe when I see that game coming up on the schedule because I know their ill intent towards Kirill Kaprizov whenever we seem to play him, especially in Winnipeg. It seems to always occur. And, he's putting up tremendous numbers right now, and I've stated this before. This very well could be his best career year yet in the NHL, and I've gone on record to say that even before the season started, I'm very indifferent to what happens in this final year of the Parise-Suter contract era. Just because I didn't think, I didn't really make much of what was going to happen this season because we didn't have the money to bring any additional tools and big-time players onto the roster until that stuff clears. Now, I'm not saying once those contracts end that we're just going
to be
shoppers and be all of a sudden just a super team. No, that's not necessarily the case, but I was very meh, very indifferent on this season, but so far it has been spectacular to watch, especially with Kaprizov playing his best hockey yet.
It'll make a difference. It just won't be. I think I would caution people to think that all of a sudden an influx of NHL All-Stars are going to be coming in here. I think it's roughly in the $14 million range, which is probably one really good and another decent player. In total, but if you look at what that gives them, I mean, Matt Boldy is becoming a superstar. He's got 15 points. Matt Zuccarello, at 37 years old, is off to an unbelievably good start. 13 points here in his first 14 games. Marco Rossi's played great. He's finally coming around. I think what you're seeing here is, in my mind, we're seeing John Hines' system being put into place because, you know, don't forget, he came in, about a month and change into the season last year and had to take over. That's tough to do.
Yeah.
But he's putting guys in position, I think, and then they're doing the rest. This is a combination, and it is a, frankly, to me, it's a sustainable combination of your stars playing well and your young guys really doing what they needed to do. And so Marco Rossi, they've waited 3 years to be this guy, and this 13 points in 14 games, and Matt Zuccarello is off to a great start. Boldy he's got four game winning goals this year. I mean, and then you couple that with Philip Gustafson, who's been great, Marc-Andre Fleury, who's been great. They haven't even needed to bring up Jesper Wallstedt yet from Iowa, and put him in. And this is, you know, they will eventually because this is Marc-Andre Fleury's last year. But I think, in my mind, this is a very sustainable model for this team to continue to have success, especially in that conference. Utah is okay. Colorado somehow, inexplicably, only has 14 points because they have 8 losses and 7 wins. Winnipeg's the one that's really interesting. They're 14-1. They have, I want to say, they have 2 or 3 scorers in the top 25. Shifley, Kyle O'Connor. Who am I missing here? There's Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, they've got some really, really great scorers that if they can stay on that pace, will be incredible. And then, you know, Connor Hellebuck, as we've said, is one of, if not the best goaltender in the National Hockey League right now. Very, very, just a little bit above Gustafson. We talked about goals against average. Hellebuck's a 1.8. As good as Philip Gustafson's been at 7-2, his goals against is a 2.3. So that shows you just how well Connor Hellebuck has been playing consistently, and he's played all 12 games. He has had no, he is 11-1, has not had any break. So fun time to watch the Wild as they have continued to have some success early in the season. They are in Chicago today and will play Connor Bedard, former Rookie of the Year, who shouldn't have been the Rookie of the Year because it should have been Brock Faber, but that's my hill to die on. So that should be a fun one. We'll take a quick break. Our final guest today is Chris Hine from the Star Tribune. The arbitration hearings started this week to find out who owns the Timberwolves. We'll get an update on that from him, and I'd like to find out also what the timeline is here, because from the information I have been gathering and thought this would happen pretty quick, it's not, and so we'll find out what the holdup is. We'll talk to Chris Hine coming up next. 11:50. Time to talk a little Timberwolves. Who owns the Timberwolves is up for debate. Chris Hine writes for the Star Tribune, covers all things Timberwolves, and does a phenomenal job. This week, they started the arbitration, which was supposed to be speedy. Chris, where are we at this point? What do you know of the hearings, and kind of where are they in this timeline of figuring it out?
Yeah, so they had arbitration hearings all week downtown in Minneapolis. So it just wrapped up on Friday. And now we wait for, I think, a minimum a couple weeks here before a decision comes down. You know, there's a three-panel arbitration process here. Each side picked one of the judges or former judges. And basically, from what I understand, is the neutral arbitrator is the one that's going to ultimately make the decision here, or is kind of the swing vote in what happens in this process. So now we just wait and see. Each side has made their cases. They've made their cases in the court of public opinion as well. And yeah, we should have a resolution in coming weeks here.
I'm curious, because to me this seemed, even at the time, seemed like it was an open and shut case. It's Glenn Taylor's option, and they have to. Mark Lurie and A-Rod had a series of benchmarks that they had to hit. If they didn't, then he had the right to pull out. What I don't understand here is either they hit the benchmark or they didn't, right? I mean, either they got the payment in time or they didn't. If that's not the only issue, what else is the issue here that is causing kind of this question of ownership?
So Lurie and A-Rod would say that's wrong.
Okay.
What they would contend is they had an additional window of time that, because the sale was pending league approval, it gave them another, I forget what the time limit was. Mm-hmm. I want to say 30-day window or 90-day window.
I think it was an additional 90.
Remember. Yes, yes. So they would say that they were entitled to an additional 90-day window to complete everything because the sale was pending NBA approval. Now, that's where the sticking point is in this. Who's right and who's wrong? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we don't know, and that's what the arbitration panel has to decide. But that would be their counter-argument to what you just said would be Glenn Taylor's argument. So that's kind of where the sticking point of this all is. And who is right, who is wrong, we'll find out in a few weeks here.
And because this is an arbitration, correct, that whatever the panel comes out with, they are bound to stick to. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Our Jeff Day at the Star Tribune kind of did I'd recommend if people want to read up on it.
Yeah.
He did a great primer of this when it started earlier in the week. And basically, it leaves almost no recourse for an appeal. Mm-hmm. So whatever happens here is going to be what happens going forward.
What's better for this franchise? Is it a Mark Lurie, A-Rod run franchise, or is it a Glenn Taylor run franchise in your mind?
As the beat reporter, I don't know that I could necessarily say.
okay.
You know, that is for the fan base to decide. Yeah. I think ultimately it's going to, it will take the team in different directions. You know, I think, for instance, Glenn Taylor is satisfied with having Target Center as the arena, whereas Mark Gloria and Alex Rodriguez would want to find a place to build a new arena. So right there, there's one, you know, divergent vision of the franchise. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer Target Center, or do you want to see a new arena? I do think both sides are committed, you know, in terms of the team right now and how competitive it is. I think that they are both committed to seeing this through, to paying, you know, necessary luxury taxes, to keep the team competitive in the immediate term here. So, you know, I don't get the sense that one ownership group or the other is going to mean that the budget is suddenly going to shrink. You know, that okay. Both seem very committed to providing the necessary resources to keep this team competitive.
The team itself is off to a 6-3 start. Nice start to the season. And I know, I get it. These guys could care less who the ownership is. You know, it's just basically who's signing the checks. But how has this, if any, had any effect on the team in the early going?
Yeah, I don't think it has any effect. I really don't. You know, we asked about this last year when everything was a little more controversial as the news was breaking. And, you know, I thought Chris Finch put it well when we asked him kind of in March of last year. He's like, it really doesn't affect us down at troop level. You know, like the players' daily preparation, what they do in practice, you know, their work with the assistant coaches, all that stuff. That's not affected by the ownership situation. I think that's more a larger question for, you know, the fan base as a whole, obviously, for the front office, you know, who's got to interact with ownership on a daily basis. You know, who are they working with? I think those are more pressing issues for those groups of people. But for the players themselves, I don't think their routines or their you know, work ethics or anything like that is affected by this.
Chris Hine from the Star Tribune joining us. Real quick, Chris, with Anthony Edwards dropped 37 points the other night, he didn't even play in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Is now that Karl Anthony Towns has been traded out, and maybe this was done before, maybe this kind of set in motion before this, but is this Anthony Edwards' team now? I mean, is he the undisputed leader of this team?
Yeah, he is, and it's kind of been a gradual process over the last couple of years here. And, you know, I think the one thing that's really emerged for him over the last two seasons here is he has found his voice more as a leader. And, you know, he's being a little more vocal, you know, holding his teammates accountable, but he still does it in a positive, kind of energetic way that is more uplifting than it is dragging people down. Kind of the way that his teammates put it is, you know, for every one time he may say something critical or, you know, to you or offer that kind of advice, there's nine times that he's uplifting and positive. That's kind of the way he leads, right? So I think that's been a change that they've noticed over the last year and a half, that he's really coming into his own more as a vocal leader, which wasn't the case when you're 19, 20,
right?
20 years old, even though you are one of the best players on the team. It's a little longer process to play out.
That's for sure. Chris, thanks as always for your time. We're up against our out, but appreciate the insight. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Chris Hine from the Star Tribune. Hey, maybe the next time we'll talk to him, we'll actually know who owns the Timberwolves team. By the way, Timberwolves, I believe, back in action today as well.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Vikings coming up here in about 3 minutes. on the road in Jacksonville. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.